Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves podcast. You know, sometimes we think that that thing we're the most terrified of will kill us, will end us, will cause us to psychologically evaporate. And that thing that we're afraid of really contains our life, right? Like when we think about the things that we're afraid are going to happen, but especially the things that we're most afraid are going to happen, we tend to build adaptive strategies around that fear. And that's how we live our life, is to contain the box of who we are, which could get us there. So let's say, for example, we're afraid of being ostracized, of being attacked, of being betrayed, of being kicked out of a family or a relationship, or we're afraid that our relationship's going to end. The likely pathway to that would be authentic self-expression, right? It would be saying how you truly feel. Like if you're part of a religion, it would be potentially criticizing some of the beliefs or practices of the religion. That's likely to get you kicked out. If it's questioning faith, if it's in a romantic relationship and the other person's very reactive, defensive, and I'm sure you got your soup that feeds each other, but if they're constantly being reactive, you're going to withhold so you don't cause the reactivity, because your fear of the relationship ending will actually lead your life. Now, here's the thing is, sometimes the thing that we're most terrified of happening can actually be a thing that liberates us. So when you finally experience being kicked out of the religion, you realize that membership to the religion always required that you pretend not to ask questions, that you pretend not to question things, to act in faith. When your relationship finally ends, however it might get there, because when we avoid ending relationships, often they end through toxic ways because we don't believe that we can just choose to leave them. So then, you know, we cheat, we lie, we push the other person away, we withhold intimacy. There's lots of ways in which we do it. But no matter how you get there, where you get left finally, or the relationship ends, you're free. And although it might not feel like freedom, and there might be a lot of anger, frustration, sadness, that emotional experience can also be evidence of grief and anger about your own withholding within that relationship dynamic. So when the relationship finally ends and you can just speak your truth, that's when you're feeling truly free. So I'm saying all this because often the thing we most fear occurring, when it actually occurs, we are then free to live our lives because it's not being held over our heads. And this can lead to the creation of businesses. This can lead to wanting to teach the path that we've walked. It can lead to so many things. And I say all of this because you might be in a bottom right now. You might be in a place where you don't know who you are. You might be in a state where, yeah, you have experienced shame, feelings like you've been ganged up on or betrayed or abandoned. And I want you to know that that can actually be the birth of everything. When you have no one left to try to keep, when you have, and I'm not minimizing the pain of that, but when you have no one left to try to keep, no one left to dance for, that's when you're free to be yourself. And then, of course, you draw in people who are like you and you find your tribe, as they say. So today, I am so excited to have on the podcast Kaylor Betts. I mean, he went through that and it was the birth of everything. So today, he tells his story, shares his journey into really brilliant space as a thought leader, as an entrepreneur, as a teacher in the space of business. The way that he runs his social media is great. It's funny. He pushes the edges. And that is actually how change and transformation occur. This guy is a good human, a good friend, and I'm so excited for you to hear his wisdom, his story, his passions, all of it. So without further ado, here's the episode with Kaylor Betts. Before we dive in, please hit that subscribe button. I'm going to keep diving deeper and deeper into the root of human behavior, relationships, human connection, all the things. And by hitting that subscribe button, you help support the show and you also don't miss any episodes. Here's today's episode. And just to add a little caveat, as you listen to this episode, you will hear beeping of a person's name that we mentioned, that we just wanted to remove the attention to that because the actual conversation wasn't about them. It was about how we orient to people who are attacking us and also how different positions and ideologies really believe they themselves are doing good. So it doesn't take away anything from the conversation by beeping it, but I just want to give you some context. There's not like 1,000 beeps. There's maybe like 12. And the conversation that we have surrounding Kaler's experience is really profound. He offers so many deep insights into human behavior and diversity of thought and how to hold both opposing views, but also how to stand in your own truth. And really, isn't that what it's about? It's about being a self in the face of criticism of who we actually are and standing in our own values. So with all that said, let's go. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves podcast. Today I'm welcoming second time.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, probably two and a half years ago.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
But this will be definitely we're in two different, very different places,
yes.
Which is great. And I think it's testament to our evolution, which is also great. Yeah. Be bad if we were having the same conversations 2.5 years later. But I'm so excited to have you on. It's been an absolute privilege to watch you just like dive deeper and deeper into self-expression, authenticity. And I think you're such an inspiration and model for me, but for all the people who are like, they might not always agree with what you say, but there is an example that you're setting to create from a bold place, to live from a bold place, and not bold being a lack of compassion, but like bold being like, this is what I think, this is who I am, this is what I believe in, I'm open to different perspectives, but let's go. Yeah. Is that a fair?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's helped me create my authentic expression, like you were saying. I think that similar to what we were just talking about in our previous conversation where you were on my podcast, I think that for me, I've always struggled with authenticity. I self-abandoned and self-centered for so many years in the pursuit of love, care, and attention. I was deeply insecure for most of my life, and I really struggled. And to some degree, I'm, you know, always working on that. But for me, it was, you know, this, speaking of like Instagram, because that's what you're referring to, it was really this tool for me that I could step into with tolerable steps.
Yeah.
Right. Tolerable steps are incredibly important. Although in one way I did jump into the fire and had a video that,
that
went
wasn't
viral
by your choice, the capacity. Isn't that ironic though, that like, you're like, okay, this is a big risk. I hit publish.
Yeah.
I'm guessing really nervous when you hit that publish button.
Yeah. The heart rate was beating a little faster than normal.
And then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like in the best way, but also was it kind of like your greatest fears were realized?
Yeah. And actually, it was funny. I was watching. Did you watch that Martha Stewart documentary?
No.
On Netflix? You should watch it.
Is it good?
Yeah.
I've heard it's good.
She was like the OG influencer. You know,
yeah.
Like she almost like created what an influencer is. And she crushed it. And when she eventually lost everything, basically, and went to jail, she talked about how like her greatest fear was realized and experienced. And she ended up realizing that it was her, you know, greatest tool for liberation more than any other thing she had ever experienced.
Wow.
So her greatest fear eventually, you know, and now she's actually making a comeback and she's like now this kind of in her older age, she's this, you know, new form of influencer and she's doing really well. And it's because
80s.
She's more authentic. She's high 70s or 80s, but she's more authentic than ever because you just end up not really giving many fucks.
Yeah.
Once you actually put yourself out there, the deepest and most vulnerable expression that you can have in this world, that is who you truly want to be in this world. And when you put that out there and you realize, and you get the judgment, the criticism, the rejection, the abandonment, and the shame that comes from that, and then you realize that the sun rises the next day and you're all in one piece.
Yeah.
On the other side of that is just, these amazing things that I didn't even know I needed. So I don't even remember what your question was, but that's the experience that I had. And I've never looked back, you know, ever since I put out that video.
And for context, like it was a video where you were just sharing your experience of some of the fuckery. Is that fair?
Yeah. That's one way to put it. Before that, I was doing... Again, I was more so approaching it in like, I was focused on me and it was like, what can I say that is going to fit me into the box or the bullshit picture in my head of the way that I think that people want me to show up on Instagram. So it was just self-abandonment 101 and self-centered censorship. And it just made me post like very vanilla things, right? Yeah. It was literally like every post I made,
like
I was
just trying. At that
yes.
point. Yeah.
But I was trying to fit in. And actually the counterintuitive thing is that because I was trying to be validated, that meant therefore I didn't rise above all the noise out there. That is all the content on Instagram. So I blended in and I actually didn't really get anywhere. And then it was.
That's so true.
It's so true, man.
Because content's so ubiquitous. Yes. There's like a million people saying one thing.
Yes. It's so true. And yeah. And then, I remember I was in Bali when COVID happened, and I was doing my thing, and I was really, you know, passionate about what I was doing and my mission and all that stuff. And it was starting to get a little traction. And then COVID happened, and I was deeply afraid of COVID, you know, because I've always been like very just cautious of health. And I suppose my fear of death back then was heightened in comparison to where it is now. And yeah, I was just afraid. So I was afraid of my family dying. And, you know, we were hearing all these things about COVID and how crazy it was. And then I started to actually like listen to some people who were like, okay, let's like regulate right now. Let's actually like, you know, practice some critical thinking. Let's actually look at the stats and the data. And then I started to ask questions. And then I went further down the rabbit hole. And I ended up realizing that, you know, just the narrative that we were sold on, you know, what COVID was and what was happening didn't really add up. You know, some of it was true, but largely it was false. So I just started to get really agitated by it and really bothered by it. And it eventually got to a point where when I was back in Canada, it was April 8th, 2021 at about 7:30 Mountain Standard Time. I just got to a point, pivotal moment in my life. It just got to a point where I just couldn't like rest my head on my pillow at the end of the night and not feel like I was living in integrity, which is what you talk about all the time. We talked about in the previous conversation that authenticity and integrity is really what you believe, what you say, and what you do are all aligned. And I felt like I'm showing up and I'm talking about fluffy stuff that yeah. every... You know, kind of like holding hands and singing Kumbaya kind of stuff. And I was talking like everything was sunshine and rainbows when in actuality, I don't think it really was. So I remember I took a good amount of time because back then I was pretty riddled with perfectionism, but I wrote out a general script and I every day I would record, you know, a few takes and try and just nail this video where I would go out and I would just like, bully tell people how I felt about everything. And yeah, I created the video.
How long was it?
9 minutes.
Yeah, it was like seven something. I just remember it being a good
9 minutes and something. And I titled it Enough is Enough. And yeah, my heart rate was beating faster when I posted it, which I now realize is actually a good measure of whether something is worth posting.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I posting from my edge? Because that means you're like posting from your edge. Not to say that you can't post some things that are regulating.
Of course.
You know, like some, here's a good meme.
Yeah.
Get me through the day, you know? But yeah, that is such a good metric, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good test for sure. And so, yeah, and then I posted it and I remember it was getting so much love in the beginning. And I was like, oh shit, this is awesome. Like, you know, ego's getting validated. Yeah, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm on.
I'm not getting canceled. This is amazing.
Exactly. And the algorithm.
Kaler for mayor.
Exactly. Yeah. And the way the algorithm worked back then is different than it does now. But like for the first 2 days, it was nothing but love. And everyone was validating
me. How many
thousands
of views had it had then?
Yeah, like probably in the hundreds of thousands in the first like, couple days.
Oh, that's pretty impressive, yeah. Especially at that time, because that was like what you were saying at that time was what people were thinking.
Yes.
But also what other people were terrified of people thinking.
Exactly.
So it's like this strange paradox to be holding. Exactly. Like I'm going to point out the reality no one wants to talk about.
Yes. That's exactly what I, you know, thought I was doing. And I feel like evidently I was. And so I was in Edmonton. And then like 2 days later, I just flew to Kelowna because I was hanging out in Kelowna a lot. Just it was just better to be there over COVID because it's Kelowna over Edmonton. So I was in Kelowna, and I'll never forget, I was in the sauna and like people were messaging me like, oh, your video is so great, blah, blah, blah. And I was in the sauna in Kelowna and one of my buddies calls me and he goes, yo, have you seen your post lately? And I was like, what? And so what happened was like a few like pretty big influencers basically like debunked my video and said it was false. And then there was one, I'm not going to name names, but there was one like she's pretty big. And there's actually a few big influencers that were insinuating that I was being racist and ableist and fatphobic and all the thing, all the isms, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, so then the mob
came after my post.
Yeah. So then I was like tested. And, you know, I remember like, honestly, Mark, if I hadn't, like I had already gone through my own spiritual journey, albeit it was, you know, pretty grounded. And then also like a personal development journey. And I was relatively conscious. I would deem myself relatively conscious back then. And, but I'm telling you, if that would have happened, like even 2 years beforehand, when I was like really in the midst of navigating through just my like deep internal insecurities and wounding, I mean, I think I would have been in the hospital. Like that would have
put me in the hospital. With a psychological break.
Yeah. Like, and I didn't eat or sleep much. Well, sleep was okay, but I didn't eat like for like almost a week straight. And when I say I didn't eat, I mean like very little.
Because your stomach was so turned.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I mean, ultimately the purpose of a mob, the purpose of social exile. Yeah. You know, have you ever seen the movie Joy with Jennifer Lawrence?
I love it.
Yeah. And she like, it tolerates so much shit. And she's like, everyone's good. Her ex-husband lives in her basement. Her mom's a fucking asshole. Yeah, I think it's her mom.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, she's like building a business and she just has a, and I think about like your video just being this like tipping point where so much of you is wanting to actually pour out. Yeah. It comes out actually in a relatively structured, in the way that you scripted it. That's the way to do it. A lot of people just hit record and blow shit up.
Yeah.
You know, I think for so many people, they spend their lives holding on to all of the words they want to say, and then they wonder why they are physiologically inflamed. You know, name the metabolic.
Well, what does Wayne Dyer says? He says, don't die with your song, or don't die with your music inside of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like wild to think that, and this was true for me, which I didn't realize was true till it was happening. And maybe a bit in hindsight, this like I was already pretty self-expressed.
Yeah.
Because I was pretty like outspoken about a lot of things, but man, when it became correlated to integrity and values and like, why are we not allowed to talk about something?
Yeah, because can it's I so ask, freeing. Like, so, because you were pretty self-expressed, but would you also agree that we can be largely self-expressed on our social media and through our content, but just in the ways that are convenient and avoid judgment and criticism? Right. Because look, no matter what, we're not, I mean, some people sit with me for coffee and they're like, oh, you're a little different than you are on your Instagram. And I'm like, well, did you expect me to rant in your ear for, you know, we're just having fucking coffee here. Yeah. Like if we get into the right conversation, you will see a different energy in me. But that's a part of me that I did censor and that I was too afraid to put out there, but I was just putting, it's not that the other stuff wasn't authentic. Because I would stand by everything, maybe not everything, but most of the things I said, unless maybe my beliefs have changed. But it just was the convenient part.
Yeah.
Of me. It was the part of me that would, again, get more love, care, and attention, and was really trying to just avoid any sort of judgment or criticism because, and it was all subconscious. I mean, I didn't even realize what I was doing, but I was really just trying to avoid anyone who wouldn't affirm, you know, me and my beliefs and what I was putting out there. I put out very convenient stuff. And it's no surprise that when I actually went out and said the thing that is polarizing, that's when my business career online really started. And I had a lot of hate and it was intense, but I got a lot of love as well too. And when I had Grant Cardone on my podcast, he said something that always stuck with me. He said, you know, if I could get half the country to hate me, maybe I could become president.
Oh, wow.
And it's so true, you know, like, it is a good business strategy, but it also turns out if you can make that come from an integral and authentic place, it's actually one of the best processes that you can go through for growth and expansion and healing.
Yeah, that's so true. You don't realize that in some way it's exposure therapy for people pleasers.
It is.
You know,
it's exposure therapy.
What's interesting too is like, I agree with you about content in that a lot of the stuff I was teaching, relational stuff, like I would often say something that might be controversial in terms of a perspective
on right.
whatever, or language was misinterpreted, whatever. You're not using all the fucking 87 qualifiers to make sure you don't hurt someone's feelings. But it was like there wasn't a lot of social risk to that content. And so when all of a sudden you're talking about something that is has a high level of circulating anxiety and fear, then of course the risk is so much higher. And so it was like, I didn't realize that was happening because at the beginning I interviewed a doctor who was like, yeah, this is real. And this is blah, 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 blah. Good friend of mine. Awesome human. And then I remember when they were promoting the vaccine, when it first came out, I was like, wait, where are they getting the data to say it stops transmission? That doesn't make sense. I read the clinical trials.
You were just asking
and I was like, hey, everybody, like, this doesn't make sense. They can't say that. And then that's when I was like, oh, there's like a, you're not allowed to say this. This is weird. And that's when I started to be like, okay, there's something wrong here. Maybe, am I crazy? And that's when I started to see people, the news and public health were training people to have specific answers to like, if someone was saying, are you going to get the thing? And I'd be like, oh, no, there's not enough long-term data right now. And some of the stuff's still inconsequential for me. Like, I'm not sure. And I'm not at risk, really. They'd be like, oh, there's tons of long-term data. Did you know that mRNA?
They had like canned answers. Yeah.
And when I was a rep, we used to have an objection. That's what it's called. Oh, yeah. We used to have objection handlers. So as a rep, you were trained on your product. And then you were trained on, here are the specific objections you're going to get.
Right.
Here are those perfectly designed answers. And I was like in the middle of conversations with people and I'd be like, oh my God, this is like an objection handler. But the media was like programming people. But to bring all this like back to what we're talking about, what was interesting is when you start to talk about, we're calling it vanilla stuff, but it could be like really edge. Like I'm talking about the thing. When the first time I wrote about relationships, I was so vulnerable and so scared. So your level of capacity.
So true.
Right? Starts to like, oh, well, now I could talk about that. Why can't I? Oh, I'm going to keep, as you said, the publish when you're nervous. That's a good sign. And so I think that just like the line kept shifting for me with confidence, if that makes sense.
Well, that speaks and to the exposure therapy.
Yeah.
You get desensitized and then there's always the next level. So
that's
there
why
is
you got to do it.
Yes. There is still the next level for me. Like there are still things.
Oh, so many.
I mean, Kiki, as you know, silly as this is going to sound, Kiki is my mega liberal twin that I have with the blue hair and the
satire videos.
Yeah. And Kiki. So for me to go out and make satire videos, I got really comfortable in my, I like to call them productive rants because I don't want to just be bitching and complaining. So I always have to, I always want to have utility in them, use in them, make them be productive. But I got really comfortable in producing that content. And then stepping into wearing a blue wig, which like I just did one that was like outside walking through a park in Miami with people around. That was edge for me right now after all these years. I still have, and there'll be the next level after that, level after that. But that speaks to tolerable steps.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at the nervous system and, you know, you talked about somatics in our last conversation. What healing really is and what being able to overcome those fears and insecurities, it's really just building your capacity to be with them. And the way our conditioning is that we don't do well with throwing ourselves into the fire all the time. Certainly there's exceptions where you just don't have a choice.
Right.
But if you can just, and that's my best advice because you bring up such a good point, Mark. Like I work with content creators that are just starting out and for them, like the deep dive and being thrown into the fire is to literally just get on camera, speak anything, even the safest thing they could say and post it. So tolerable steps, you know, repetition and, you know, you just end up building the capacity to be with those things and it's exposure therapy. I just am so desensitized. Like, dude, I see the like I see people attacking me. Some of it is so outlandish that it's kind of easy. Like you were talking about it before, it's kind of easy to just write off because it's like, this person is just like, you know, Sally with a cat photo in her profile and, you know, she has 30 followers. Like what do I care? And she's speaking, you know, a bunch of bullshit. But then there's some people who come in that you can tell are smart.
Right.
And they have an educated response and yeah. they want to engage in discourse.
Yeah.
It's like, and then I'm looking at the comment and I'm like getting a little pit in my stomach, like, oh, that's a good point. How do I feel about that? Then I have to look in the mirror and then I got to reflect on my post.
Dude, like, I get those. Yeah. We're really like positively intentional people
yes.
are actually engaging, which exists.
Right. But the dial is so turned down because, dude, I had on CBC, they had university professors debunking my video on CBC. I had two university professors go on, you know, one of the top podcasts. Real
was that? What's his name?
From university.
Guy who's funded
yeah.
to he's never criticized pharma. He only criticizes the people who criticize pharma, which yeah. is strange to me. An academic who's in charge of like looking at misinformation. I forget his last name.
I forget his last name too. We've asked him to come on the podcast. We don't hear back.
Oh, he won't.
Yeah.
He won't even debate like Byron Bridle, for example, who's a vaccinologist who was right from the beginning.
Yes.
He got canceled for saying he said it leaves the injection site.
Yeah.
He literally creates vaccines. He was reading clinical trials out
and
of other countries.
And we know that it doesn't localize to the injection site. Well, we know it goes literally all over the body.
He knew that. And he got canceled. His research got closed. His lab.
Tim?
No, not got celebrated and more money because he was all pro everything.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Byron Bridle.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But that's the, you know, I look at that, like someone going on the news, they end up creating the Barbara Streisand effect. Like,
yes.
Don't go look at this video where this guy's, let's debunk. So they bring so much attention and they put so much money into this. What do they call that? Pre-bunking.
Right.
That's the idea of like getting ahead of a narrative.
Right.
That's going to.
Yeah.
Again, like most people don't really understand that marketing and propaganda, I mean, are pretty much just like the same thing.
Yeah.
But they don't even understand that that's actually happening all the time. And you know, there's something sacred about your bed. It's a place where you return after a hard day, where you reflect, where you heal, where you make love, where you cry, where you dream, where you sleep, or where you just breathe. And the truth is, we often overlook how important it is to feel held by the space that we sleep in. That's why I have been continuously obsessed with Cozy Earth. These sheets, I mean, they're not just soft, they're buttery, they're cooling, and sustainably made from bamboo viscose. It's like sliding into a cloud that whispers, hey, you're safe here. And that matters. Because nervous systems that feel safe, they open, they receive, they rest. We can manage emotional experiences in our lives. So sleep isn't just sleep, it's repair. And Cozy Earth gives you the kind of sleep your soul has been craving. Now here's the best part. Cozy Earth is offering my listeners up to 40% off. That's right, 40% off. Because deep rest shouldn't be a luxury. It should be a lifestyle. So if you're ready to transform your relationship with rest, go to CozyEarth.com and use the code MARK at checkout. You will feel the difference that these sheets make. That is for certain. And remember, you are allowed to feel that good. I have two questions on this. One is, how did the experience that you had change your relationships and your life? Like change how you related? And because it would seem like such a change in your self-expression. And then secondly, how do you see people, and were you prone to this, being captured by the emotionality that we're talking about? Whether it's like, oh, the government's going to do so many things, or the people who are anti-vax are going to do so many things, right? That it's so easy to get captured by that. So first part, yeah, like how did it change your relationships?
Yeah, the relationships, I would say that's actually one of the greatest returns I got from that experience, because I gained so much clarity on why I was in relationship with who I was in relationship with. So I was kind of thrown into the fire where I didn't have a choice. You either, like everyone around me that I had relationships with before, even if they were like an acquaintance, even if I had only talked to someone once, knew about my video. And everyone around me, I'm not saying I was the center of attention, you know, or the center of the attention of the world, but everyone saw my video and they all made a decision. Am I Team Kaler or am I not wanting to associate with him? And very few people who disagreed were willing to like reach out and be like, hey, like, I understand what you're trying to say, but here's what I think. Like, you know, the curious.
Yeah. The friends who want to build a bridge.
Right. Or even acquaintances or whoever it was. But largely people just went into one or two camps. So I was thrown into the fire of being forced to like really understand why I was in relationship with the people who didn't want to not associate with me. Right. And then I had to go through the regulation and the healing process and the grieving process of all the people that abandoned me because of my video on Instagram, which to me still to this day seems pretty silly. I had to go through the grieving of that. And I had to face the reality of
love.
Exactly. And understand that it was conditional and that I actually just endured such a blessing because it showed me who really is my ride or dies, you know, or who's going to be by my side whether or not they agree with me or whether or not it's convenient for them. Because I also had to consider that the people who didn't abandon me also were facing criticism. Like there were, dude, there were Twitter threads about my video of like who my friends were and like cancel these people. There was a list of, someone went through all of the comments, but there was like thousands and thousands of comments, found out all the people in Edmonton that owned businesses that said, like affirmed my message and said, I agree, and started a thread on Twitter to, hey, here's all the business owners in Edmonton that liked Kaler's video and commented on it, like cancel these.
That is such mental health issues. Like the people who actually do that, it's like the people who, granted, I can understand why people are frustrated with some of the things that Elon Musk are doing.
Yeah.
But it's like to dox owners of Teslas who are probably liberal and democratic or whatever, you know, depending on the province or country. But it's like, that to me is such a, it like really demonstrates this lack of humanity, this lack of, there's not a relational skill there. Yeah. Like these businesses dared to support a different perspective, which really you were saying what a lot of their deeper consciousnesses were saying.
Yeah.
But you know, people are, that's not a prefrontal cortex behavior. No. That's an amygdala behavior.
Right.
And so it's really, I think it's such a mass level of trauma that no one's talking about. And I, to be fair, a lot of, people in the mental health space were captured by too.
Yeah.
Because they're, I mean, sadly what creates people in that space is the desire to help people. But then there's probably some level of unresolved codependency at the core of that. And so there's a fear of disrupting emotion and hurting people's feelings, which is not, I mean, to be fair, is not going to lead to good mental health because there's a dishonoring of the truth in order to protect feelings.
Yes.
Isn't that the whole purpose of working with someone is to actually, so they allow you to reveal what is reality so that you could change your life?
Well, and it's not even virtuous because they actually, it's not that they are really that worried about their feelings. It's that they're worried about if I hurt this person's feelings, what does that say about me?
Yeah.
I'm going to get criticized. It's all about
itself. Yeah, good call.
It's self.
It is self.
It's not true empathy to me. Sometimes the most compassionate thing is to tell someone what they don't want to hear. You know,
isn't that what really great love is based upon?
Yes.
Like
truth,
that, my
truth,
wife is truth, that for me.
Truth. Yes.
You know, truth. Like she's not being like, here's a tender, I'm going to avoid the truth. Like if she's upset about something, she brings it. And she should. That's why I'm married to her. Because she's not being like, oh, you're poor little. She's like, this is true. This might be hard to hear.
Yes. And not telling you the thing you need to hear or tiptoeing around your feelings like maybe some, you know, mental health professionals did. It is simply to avoid, judgment, criticism, or shame. So it is all self-focus. I had a word in my mind that I lost, but
narcissism.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Well, it's people pleasing.
It is people pleasing.
It's people pleasing.
And you know what's, I had like two massive bones to pick at that, which was like, first off, we are at that point in time, 2020, 2021, we're like in the midst of everyone talking about trauma informed. And I'm like, we're in the midst of a trauma that that people who are trained in this space are not actually in real time calling out that belonging and relationships are being weaponized. The other side of it is I'm like, all these child development experts and people in that are saying masks are okay and don't actually impact development, speech.
Such a disruption.
To me is like it's such an abandonment of like fundamental truths, ontological truth that like we're actually abandoning reality in order to participate in the charade, which it's.
And I often wonder what proportion was ignorance versus like knowing neglect of like, just like, I'm just going to tout this and believe this because it's convenient. And if I don't, it's going to threaten my paycheck, the way I support my family.
They would all experience exile. I get that.
Yeah. And I just often wonder the proportion. It would be awesome to know what the proportion of that is, because I think there was a little bit of both.
What do you think it does to someone's psyche or self, like self-image, when they're willing to? Because I think we can all do that, and we've done that in our lives where we like abandon ourselves for belonging, right? And I'm curious, when you have such a significant one and you like double down, you know, on the behavior, which I think people are still trying to do.
Yeah.
What do you think is the impact?
Doubling down on the behavior on what end? Me doubling down on, or?
Like, doubling down on like canceling people for dialogue, canceling people for, because now the receipts are out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and so a lot of people like are not actually taking ownership for where they might have been wrong historically. And of course, they'll say, we were moving at the speed of science.
Yeah.
Dr. Fauci said, I am science. So if you criticize science, you criticize, if you criticize me, you criticize science.
Yeah. And I've literally even heard them say, like, even though you were right, you were ahead of science, therefore you were wrong. So even, do you know what I mean?
Like, that is such great gaslighting.
It's so gaslighting to a T. Like gaslighting to a T.
Clown world.
And I got to be honest, those are the same kind of people who always use the phrase gaslighting. Like they're the first to tell you that you're gaslighting them. And it's
they're like gaslighting, they're gaslighting.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Like a double negative. So exactly. It's not, no gaslighting happens.
So it's like me trying to have a conversation that holds critical thinking and like discourse, you know, trying to use the frontal lobes of our brains is gaslighting. Okay, I gotcha. What was the question? So
what do you think is the cost of that when you're like not willing to reach into humility?
Well, I think that, you know, who comes to mind is Jordan Peterson. You know, he says, you don't get away with anything. There's consequences to every action you do that isn't aligned with truth or aligned with your values and who you ultimately want to be in this world and what you're optimizing for. So I really hold that belief. I think you do not get away with anything. And I think that, you know, you're as sick as your secrets as well too.
I remember hearing Carolyn Mace say in all her 50 years of healing work, there's one truth she knew was that liars don't heal. And I actually, in my own self-expression, the negotiation I make, because the origins of my desire to learn about relationship were from a place of like, how did I get here? Like when I was engaged, didn't want to be blah, 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 blah. But like the moment I started to ask, why do I do what I do? Which, you know, some might call the moment of awakening, which is really the moment of curiosity. And I remember saying to myself, like, I avoided every hard conversation in my life. And so I started to correlate like my own well-being with self-expression, that like physiologically, if I don't be aligned with truth and honesty and integrity, I'll get sick. Yes. Do you have a similar?
Yeah, well, I think that's why I love the phrase dis-ease as opposed to disease. And I think that even someone like, man, we're really picking on poor, but he's picked on
He's picked on a lot of people.
I am not apprehensive to do so. And I'm just, you know, again, I'm also.
He for sure is doing what he's doing from a very positive place of intention, I would imagine.
Dude, I believe Hitler woke up in the morning and looked in the mirror and thought he was doing.
Yeah, that's true. You know,
I do hold that belief that I think that everyone that's doing evil in the world has convinced them, or just wrongdoing or something that doesn't serve humanity, I think has convinced themselves a narrative that affirms what they're doing and justifies what they're doing. I just think that's how it works.
Well, to point out too, that from a place of dialogue and discourse, you've invited him to enter a conversation with you exactly. to actually talk about.
And you know what, dude, what just a beautiful before the thing conversation, I would just be like, what's going on, man? Like and I'm not trying to sound super virtuous here. It's just like, I actually yearn, although I do love a good debate. And there is, I think, a part of me that's probably not the healthiest place that loves a like enemy situation on social media. And, you know, like our ego loves that. But there's also a part of me that yearns to like sit with him and like, this is going to sound maybe kind of cheesy, but like cry with him and like be able to express like
the impact he had.
No, I want to know what he struggles with. You know, there's that meme that floats around the interwebs that's like, everyone is dealing with a battle that you have no idea about. Be kind.
What's his?
And it's, I want to know what's underneath all of it. And I would love if he would be able to listen and receive what's underneath, because I got my shit, you know? And I would love to, you know, there's that exercise, they often do it at personal growth events where you just look into the eyes of someone else for like 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And after a certain duration of time, it's very common for both parties to just start crying. Because I think there's something about just looking into the eyes that allows you to tap into the depth of like the humanness of that person. And I think that there's just this natural conditioning of empathy that comes up when you are just staring someone in the eyes for that long. And going back to, I yearn for that. Like because I know there's
a humanity.
Yeah. And what we're doing in this discourse on social media and the internet, like it's so surface level. It's not human connection in any way. It's not primal. It's not at all. It's not even sacred. Like it's not like and it's not like what it was like in human history where like you'd fight, you go to war, right? Like even to me, this might sound wild to some people, but that's even more noble to me than bitching about each other's
hiding
opinions.
Behind a private hiding behind a screen, profile right? picture, yeah.
But I would love to know, you asked the consequences of it. I would love to somehow be able to get inside of his spirit, his psychology, when he rests his head on his pillow at the end of the night. And I can only imagine that, and by the way, like I've been here too, but I can only imagine that now that he had a chance to look back, and if he is someone who actually cares about the data, he's now looked at the data we have now versus what we had over COVID. And he must have some sort of conscious awareness that he was wrong about some things. And to my knowledge, he hasn't spoke about it. So I believe he holds that when he rests his head on his pillow at the end of the night. And I just feel like there's a really good quote out there that says, success is in sleeping well at night. And you said something in our last conversation that was about how we have this, like, because we're thrown into the social media world, we're carrying that sort of social pressure with us even when we sleep.
Yeah.
Dr. Matthew Walker talks about how when you're in a new environment, like a new bed, like a hotel or something, like for the first night, 40% of your brain is awake because it's looking for threats.
Because it's not a familiar place.
It's not safe.
Mm.
And you have to be more aware than if you are in a safe, comfortable place that's familiar. So I have to imagine that someone like that who must know, I'm going to say the damage that he did and the lies that he told, it's affecting him at least on some sort of, maybe even a subconscious level, even if he's not really aware of it.
Yeah, I would imagine that in order to, you either then isolate yourself with information that debunks everything all the time so that any criticism is always being reconciled.
Cognitive dissonance.
Right, yeah. But you have like, you go to the certain scientists who are all saying that study, not good. Yeah. This one, not good. I mean, every side's doing that, which is really interesting. And so it's like, if you can't definitively say one thing, then that means both sides need defending. Well, you know what I'm saying?
And you're all, I do, but you're also not a scientist then, if that's what you're doing.
Right, 100%. Like you should be able to.
Fundamentally, you work to prove yourself wrong.
That's ideal. If you are an
integral scientist.
Well, yeah, because I think if I was to really look at someone, and maybe he's done this, I haven't seen this, but I don't think, like not in my experience, but he might've done it, is that if you really wanted to bring integrity as a news station or a fact checker or a misinformation person, and the cost of disinformation, and you're getting funding from the government who might have purveyed some of that.
Yeah.
And the media is fact checking itself. It's like when the government investigates itself and finds nothing wrong. But if they were to say, hey, Pfizer said this, or hey, the CBC said this, it was actually incorrect and it was misleading, then now you have credibility. But when they're only being funded in one direction, that's where it has. That's why no one trusts the mainstream media.
Yeah.
That's why the trust in doctors is at an all-time low. Not because people all of a sudden propaganda created this dislike in mainstream media. While there is truth to people saying don't trust the media itself has not been trustworthy.
Yeah,
public health officials have not been trustworthy. And people can smell that bullshit.
And the counterintuitive thing is that they think it's good for business to just not highlight where they've been wrong in the past. COVID's a perfect example. Let's take like CNN.
Yeah.
Right? Like they could do stories on, hey, we actually want to do a segment on the things we actually got wrong.
Oh my God. Could you imagine how much trust?
Yeah, but counterintuitively, it actually would in the macro, it would be so much better for business because their ratings have never been lower because of mistrust.
Right.
Because you're not acknowledging where you have actually tried to indoctrinate people into an agenda and into misleading data to try and get people to stay in their houses and honestly live in fear. That's their game.
I think it's that it would open them up liability wise to them, because now they'd be saying, we did this.
This is where you could sue us.
Yeah. And I think that's true for
that's probably
doctors, right. For, you know, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you, when people are captured by this fear and identity of a perspective or a side, as I was saying before, is like, that's the problem. I should never ask two questions at the same time. I always have to remind myself of that. Because the first one, you end up going down rabbit holes.
Yes,
we did. So how do you see people freeing them? Because we're all prone to that. How do you see people freeing themselves from being captured by an emotionality, an identity of a cause, mm-hmm. and actually why they need to double down on like what freedom would look like, truthfully?
Well, one of Jordan Peterson's 12 rules for life is tell the truth or at least don't lie. And I like to just add on a little like in brackets, especially when it's hard.
Mm.
So I think for me, one of the things I'm actually really looking forward to, and this is a good reminder, I could have, I'm sure, done it already. One of the things I'm really looking forward to post is a post where I genuinely am saying I was wrong about this. I said this in my past. Upon reflection, I've realized I'm wrong. I don't want to mislead you. And, you know, here it is. Because for me, it would be based on what's optimal for self-healing and growth. It would be a good test for me to start doing what I just said I wish CNN would do. Because certainly I haven't been right about everything. I will say my Enough is Enough video, I have no problem people watching it now. It's aged very well. All of the things I said in it were...
Have you ever replayed it?
I haven't reposted it.
Like on your podcast or something?
No. But
like the video that freed me?
No, but I've talked about it a ton. I should repost it more, but I think there's actually probably... I've been avoiding it probably for some deeper reason, but I should look at that. But I think that is... the test that I think everyone should go through is, I think it's a very noble and useful practice to just look back as a content creator, especially, and just look back and be like, what have I changed my mind about?
Yeah.
And acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Express it, talk about it. And I think there's multiple uses for that. I think that it builds trust. Then your audience knows, oh, he's actually going to tell me where he was wrong. But then also, again, I think it's just it's not convenient to do that. It would be way better to just talk about the next thing that you believe that you're going to get validated in by your audience. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I think that's one way to break the cycle is to just make it a practice to reflect on what you've said and look at where you've changed your perspectives, worldview, and ideological perspectives. And I think it's a healthy thing to do.
That's a great idea. I was just thinking as you were saying that of like putting up a story with a question box saying like, what do you feel I've gotten totally wrong?
That's also a good way is to call that
really
in.
Interesting. Just to see perceptionally.
Yes.
Which I have definitely taken ownership for where I've been divisive or where and like done videos on it and podcasts.
Well, let's talk about the divisiveness because what's the harmony to strike there? Because anytime you say anything that's calling out lies or, hey, this isn't true or this is misleading or just saying any sort of polarizing thing, I mean, it in itself inherently is divisive.
Yeah.
So that's the trouble I've had where people say I'm divisive. It's like...
That is subjective for sure.
It's subjective, but it's also like no matter what, it's going to be divisive. So for me, my...
That's a good point.
My thesis on that is if it's productive. So that's kind of the litmus test that I run all my...
How do you make it productive?
So I think that there's many ways in which... So let's say I'm doing one of my rants. There's a big difference between just bitching and complaining and riling up everyone. This is what politicians do all the time. They just rile up the crowd. And I get it. Like even Trump at his rallies, like I get, okay, if I was at a rally, I'd probably do that too. That's just good marketing and whatever. But ultimately, I think the productivity comes from there's utility in being able to be a warrior with a leading and dominant masculine energy, express something out on social media and stand up and say, this is wrong and we need to change this.
Yeah.
And you guys should reshare this because I think it actually matters. Because public opinion has been changed and influenced through content.
For sure.
We know that. And that, so that can be really useful. But then I think just being solution based. So at the end of the day, reminding people, and I do this and I try and do it a lot. We talked about the red pill versus the gold pill.
Yeah. What is, tell me the difference.
So the red pill is essentially awakening to the lies that were being sold largely from institutions and establishments and the elite.
Right.
And more specifically, the lies that don't serve us in a positive way. It's waking up to how the world really works and what the actual truth is.
The systems,
all that stuff. The propaganda. That's the red pill. But there's a ceiling to that, right? And not all rabbit holes lead to truth. So you can get obsessed with that, addicted to that, and then you end up somewhere that's not the truth.
QAnon. We're
not rooted in facts.
QAnon. Yeah, that was a big one.
That was a really big one.
And like lots of people ended up. And I would imagine in some way someone would have called that like a counter op, you know, like a way. Oh, I forget what they call that, but.
Yeah, 100%. Like controlled opposition kind of stuff. Yeah.
Like to take down people who are so easily co-opted and enrolled. Like I know a guy who got a tattoo of it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's not aging well. Your video has stood much better test.
Yes.
His tattoo, it's like an ex's name. That's not good.
And not only that, but I think there's diminishing returns to the red pill if you go too far down the rabbit hole, and you actually become subject to the same fear state that I hate to sound tribal, but like our side or worldview is so critical of the other side for living in.
Yeah.
It's just fear of different things. The truthers are afraid of the fucking globalist agenda and, you know, the Great Reset, whereas the other side is just afraid of like, you know, bigots and racists and fascism. Yeah, yeah. So that's the red pill.
Intolerance,
So I think that there's a threshold, and I think there is a healthy level of red pill that you can take. I think there's not taking enough of the red pill, and there's overdoing it with the red pill. The gold pill to me, and there's also the black pill. The black pill is where you're basically like someone's holding your hair back while you puke in the toilet because you are constantly living in a fear state because you're you know the awakening that you have, and then you start to get really unsettled, and it feels really unnerving when you start to awaken to what's really going on.
Yeah, like you get almost caught in the void.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's interesting.
Gold pill to me is the recognition and the realization of where your liberation and freedom truly lies. And I think it's to take largely and disproportionately your focus off of the external lies that we're being sold and largely the things that are out of our control.
Yeah.
And it's to actually understand that the greatest awakening that will serve your highest quality of life and potential is self-awareness, self-awakening, and realizing that most people, myself included, were or are telling ourselves more lies than the government is.
Yeah.
And that those are the lies you actually control.
Yeah.
And as Peter Crone says, we're not living out our lives. We're living out the narratives in our mind. So we have all these stories that we're telling ourselves that, you know, really are not serving us and are blocking us as self-sabotage, blocking us from our highest potential and our highest and most noble pursuits in this world. So that's the gold pill, is to realize like your sovereignty is more of an internal game, you know? And once you can get out of your own way, meaning once you can realize that the thing that's messing you up the most is the bullshit ideas that you have in your head of how everything needs to be and how you are like, oh, I'm not worthy. I'm not enough. I'm not worthy of being seen. I'm, you know, the list goes on. That's the gold pill. And that to me, to like go back to your question, that to me is where I think I remain grounded in all of this truther stuff. Is I also like, people are like, how are you immersed in that world? And how are you not like laying awake at night riddled with fear? Like, I am not really that affected by it. And I don't know what's unique about me, because I almost hear from everyone that like a lot of people are like, oh man, I had to stop going down there. I can go down it and I can look at it for what it is. To me, I actually treat it more as entertainment than anything. It's useful to learn what's really going on, but let's face it, I learned that a long time ago. If I go down more rabbit holes, it's just entertainment to me. It's interesting. Yeah. I love to know how the world really works and question, but it doesn't really affect my inner peace that much. I suppose there could be something that happens that would. Of course there would be. But the gold pill to me is like, yeah, just the recognition that like, if you truly want to be free, it's just self-awareness. And then as Viktor Frankl says, our freedom lies in between stimulus and response. So it's to realize and be aware of the stimulus,
yeah,
and then respond in the way that serves your highest self as opposed to distracts you farther away from it.
Hmm. I remember Kelly Brogan talking about that a lot of activism or like, and she's talking about herself because she's like, she talked about like when she was an active psychiatrist that she was like, if I don't speak, like, who will save these people from big pharma and psychiatric products and all these things? And she was saying that a lot of activism is just dysregulation. Like, it's the trauma triangle. So you're just recreating that you're always the victim and the savior, but never the perpetrator.
Yeah.
But we're willing to become a perpetrator in service of that. And I remember hearing her say that, and I was like, oh, that's so true. Like, the people really caught in the black pill or the red pill, the extremes that are just like their whole life is maybe that, like even the example of QAnon or whatever it's say is like, it becomes identity.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's easy to be like, I'm the one who's good. I need to be, it's like when I'm working with someone and I know you would have this experience where you're working with someone and they're like, I can't raise my prices. Because if I raise my prices, like there's all these people that I'm going to leave behind.
Right.
And I'm like, listen, you already did the training. Like that's, you provided, you have courses, you have podcasts, you have whatever. And that serves Literally, I was
free stuff.
I was saying to someone recently, I was like, could you go on YouTube right now and find a video on that subject and become a master in it?
Yeah.
And she was like, for sure. And I was like, so are you really abandoning people? No. But that's why, you know, there's this that codependency.
Yeah.
And this belief, I'm the one.
Yeah.
And if I don't do it, then X, Y, Z are fucked.
Yeah. It's
but it keeps you so operating in that same level.
It's a deep-seated fear of being rejected, right? That's how I interpret it a lot, is like, I can't raise my prices because then I'll get rejected and then I'll feel bad about the person who can't afford it. But what I say is, I say, well, if you don't charge what you're worth and you don't fill your cup and help people from the overflow of that cup, then you have to end up going out and getting a job, and you're not going to be able to do this full time.
You're going
to
resent them anyways.
You're going to resent them anyways, right?
The summer nights are heating up. And if you've been waking up drenched or tossing around trying to find the new cool spot on your bed, I totally get it. I've been there. And let's be honest, if your mattress is trapping heat, it might be time for a change. That's why I want to tell you about a product I really believe in. Avocado Green Mattress. These mattresses are next level. Luxuriously comfortable, naturally breathable, and made with certified organic materials. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know I'm all about high quality organic products that support not just our health, but also the planet. Avocado uses certified organic latex, wool, and cotton. So you're not sleeping on chemicals. You're sleeping on materials that are better for your body and designed to breathe, which means cooler sleep, especially when it's hot outside. Whether you love a firmer feel or want something plush, Avocado's got options for everybody and every sleep style. They even have a mattress quiz to help you find your perfect match, which I love because sleep is deeply personal and one size does not fit all. Now, here's the thing I respect most about Avocado. They walk their talk. They're a certified B Corp, which means they meet the highest standards in sustainability, ethics, and transparency. Every decision from farm to finished product is rooted in care for you and for the planet. This isn't just about selling mattresses. It's about supporting a healthier life, a healthier earth. And that's a mission I can definitely get behind. And the logistics, easy. You can get financing with Affirm, a sleep trial for up to a full year, and retail locations if you want to try one in person. Head to avocadogreenmattress.com and save up to 20% on certified organic mattresses during their Labor Day sale. Avocado, dream of better.
But I think, you know, God Sod.
Yeah.
Has a good, I love God Sod. He's great. He talks about suicidal empathy.
Yeah, yeah. I like that term. He's writing a book on it, I think.
Yeah. Right. And it's like, you know, it's just how human psychology works. It's like, we pick a fight to seem, and it's like, it's virtue and being honorable and being empathetic. But what's really behind it for a lot of people who are unconscious to it is it's just an overcompensation for like your wounds.
Right.
And, you know, where you feel the most insecure. And you got to be careful of that. I have to be careful of that as well, too. I mean, I'm sure to some degree I've played in that as well, too. But I just try and be really aware of it, because we have all these ways of coping with our deepest wounds that we convince ourselves is actually coming from a place of empathy and virtue.
Well, you work with a lot of people in building their businesses, launching their businesses, building their social media content in service of that.
Yes.
And what do you see as being the first most important steps to, I guess, gold pill them on some level?
Yeah, well, what differentiates me, I believe, and us at Awaken Winning, because there's a lot of players in that space who will teach you how to take your life experiences, skill sets, problems you've solved, hyper talents, create a hyper-specific niche, build content around it where you're an authority, build your online presence, create digital products that you then sell to them. And it's a great business model. I love it. And it's also an alternative to the system that I think is failing people all the time. You know, so some of these coaches that we work with, they're functional medicine practitioners, or they're whatever. They're helping dog owners create healthier dogs. Like, we have the most obscure niches that are crushing it. We're creating those alternatives for people, which I love. But what differentiates us is I've taken my, because I started as a life coach. I hate that term, but let's just, you know, for a lack of a better term, more specifically helping people with their subconscious conditioning and programming and how it's actually getting in their way and causing self-sabotage. So what we do is first, the business strategy and the ideas are the easy part. It's the execution and the implementation that is everything. Now, why do people have a hard time implementing and executing? That's still not the difficult part. It's up here. It's the fact that we're not living out our lives, we're living out the narratives in our minds. So what blocks someone from even being able to implement and execute, and then just like, look, content creation, although it's a skill, no question, I'm not undermining just how much skill it takes to be really good at those things. But the actual strategies, lead generation, creating good content, educating, it's not even close to the hard part. The most difficult part and where we start with people is we teach them why they're getting in their own way, why they can't show up on social media consistently, why they can't have the discipline to not have a lifestyle, diet, and environment that actually gives them the energy and the bandwidth to put into their business. Like, it's like losing weight.
So do they tend to like get fitter, get healthier, get all the things?
That's the thing. It's like relationship.
Well, it's everything.
It's like relationship. You want to have a beautiful, healthy, strong union with someone romantically. Well, you can focus on the strategies, like how to have a difficult conversation, how to set boundaries, you can do all that. But you know better than anyone, the best way to create a healthy, strong, romantic union and a deep, healthy bond and connection with your partner is to actually start with relationship with self.
Yeah.
Right? What's holding me back? What are my patterns that aren't serving me? What are my limiting beliefs? Where am I wounded? And where am I self-abandoning? It's the same with business.
Right.
So that's where we start. And people are like, oh, fuck, I thought it was you going to teach me about lead generation strategies. It's like, we'll get there, Sally.
Yeah.
I promise you. But we got to start with a relationship with self.
That's so great. And it's to think like the gold pill. What I like about that concept is most people are talking about things like getting red-pilled. All of a sudden, they're like, oh, my God, the world, this is the way it works. And yet, Corey George, I remember he was giving a talk at that conference both you and I spoke at. Yeah. And I remember he had a slide with all the things that were like the most terrifying things that could have happened in the last 5 years or whatever.
Most of them didn't.
Yeah. And he goes, which one of these happened? And I think it was none, maybe one. Yeah. And I remember someone was like, no, that happened. And he's like, bullshit. And he's like, the only reason that happened to you is because you didn't create enough wealth for it not to be a choice.
Yes.
And I was like, ooh, that's savage. But there's such a truth to that. It's like, because simultaneously we're taught the idea that wealth generation and the desire to make money is somehow evilly motivated, which is, of course, at the core of the messaging we hear about Elon Musk. And I'm not saying that there might not be a certain level of wealth that just is like unnecessary and couldn't be easily redistributed, etc. Sure, there's a dialogue here. It's not binary. But the level of wealth that you truly need in order to create regulation and sovereignty and choice is not the average household income.
No.
Especially in Canada with inflation. It's like, first off, you're not even owning a house in Vancouver unless you're making a couple million dollars a year, which is fucking crazy.
It's insane.
The thing I used to think, I was like, oh, doctors are the ones that can afford houses.
Yeah.
No, you need to own some sort of mysterious business that, no, I just don't know what everyone does who lives in Carisdale, Jericho, Spanish Bank, like Kits, you know, you're like, holy.
Well, look.
But then you're like, oh, I gotta figure out how to do this.
Yeah. I mean, look, fundamentally, the desire and the pursuit for money can have evil intentions. No question.
100%.
It can come from an unhealthy place.
Scarcity, control, everything.
It also can come from a place of understanding that wealth, true wealth, is just options and possibilities. And
not money, but what money can generate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny. Like, I've hit some targets of, you know, monetarily. I still have, you know, desire to make way more. I'm not dwelling on the fact that I'm not there yet. And I understand there really isn't a destination. The goalposts just keep getting moved farther and farther apart. So I understand that. But the pursuit of money for me is, I mean, it's such a tool. It's such a profoundly positive tool if you can use it in the right way. I mean, Elon Musk, for example, he has all this money. I mean, yeah, you could argue that it's unnecessary after a certain point. Well, it's unnecessary to meet our basic needs. No shit. But how many jobs has he created? I mean, now he gets to work at Doge in the government for nothing. In fact, he's losing money. Tesla stock is way down.
Way down. Yeah.
He's taking bandwidth that he could be putting in all of his other pursuits, and he's, but he put himself in that position because I do believe, and I'm always willing to be wrong, and maybe we're wrong about Elon, but I do believe it's because he's remained incredibly consistent, and I believe it's because he actually cares about the world and society, and he sees he can make a big impact, and he wants to do so. So
right.
He's doing it for free. Did you see his office in the White House?
No.
It's this lit, it's looks like it's smaller than this room. He's got this shitty little desk and like a little computer, and it looks like a dungeon. Not even a window in it, you know? So
I'd be working remotely if I was him.
Yeah. Now, look, I'm not.
Nice house. Damn.
I'm exactly. But I'm not like a.
Wait, doesn't he live in like a trailer or something?
Yeah.
I feel like there's.
Think he owns.
Or he rents houses. Or,
yeah.
I forget.
But I'm not saying poor Elon by any means. But all I'm saying is like, you got to look at that as like.
And if we could get a Doge in Canada. I do think like the part that people have a hard time with Elon is that one, he wasn't like an elected official, which I totally can understand the criticism of.
Yeah.
And that he has contracts with the government. Yeah. So that could feel like a conflict of interest. Well, it is a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. And that he's like, all these people are just getting fired. And so there's just this feeling of absolute sort of like dehumanization.
Yeah.
And so I think we can hold the complexity that there's like a reality there and there are people's jobs, et cetera, important. But also like, goddamn, wouldn't we love a little government efficiency? So it's like, of course, when you make things more efficient, there is a cost. They did rip off a big Band-Aid, though. It's like a...
There's no perfect solution. Everything is a trade-off.
Yeah.
And this is something I talk a lot about when it comes to politics is I think that, and I understand why, but people have a hard time understanding the nuance of the political game and political figures. So like in Elon Musk, I can take the good with the maybe what I disagree with or what I don't. I look at it as like a net gain or positive. Maybe that's because I'm business minded as well too. I mean, I can love and appreciate, or let's talk about relationships because I'm on a podcast with Mark Groves. Your partner, imagine if you hyper-focused and you succumbed to our negativity bias that puts so much more of a highlight and an awareness of the negative, and it overshadows the positive. You know, there's this cockroach example of if you have a let's say you have the best plate of food that you love, like your meal that your go-to, it's so delicious. You put one cockroach in the middle that doesn't even take up the majority of the plate. It's done. You don't want to eat the rest. But the opposite isn't true. If you have swamp water, dirty, gross swamp water, and you put your favorite piece of food in there that's delicious, a little piece, it doesn't make the swamp water desirable.
Yeah.
So that's our negativity bias. If you look at your partner, could you imagine if you just wrote them off every time you had something that was imperfect or a shortcoming or a flaw or something you didn't agree with or like about them? I look at it in the same as our political figures, like largely net, if I'm looking at it from a net perspective, I think Donald Trump is a positive for where the state of the world and the state of the US is. But I don't love everything about him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love everything Elon's doing. I question some of the things that Elon's doing. But net, and you're right, like people are losing jobs. That sucks. They have kids. We got to be empathetic to that. But like overall, if you look at it in the macro, so what are we going to do? Keep jobs that like,
right.
You know, and yeah, some immigrants are going to get kicked out or separated from their children, but we make that trade-off all the time, right? If someone gets arrested for drugs, they get, because they're dealing drugs and they have two kids at home, they get separated from their kids. Because collectively, we've decided that if someone's selling drugs, and some people, you know, have their opinions about the war on drugs, whatever, But like we separate them from their children, right? Everything is a trade-off.
And yeah, there's a line that gets drawn by society.
Everything. You have to take the good with the bad. And that's a really difficult thing to do. But
it's a hard line to draw because you're always going to have
Pierre,
people who disagree with where the line is.
I don't love everything Pierre's doing. I don't love every policy he has. There's actually quite a few things. I find him to be very quite establishment, and I'm more of a libertarian, like anti-establishment, not always, but for the most part. But yet, I don't know, we have two fucking choices.
Right.
Maxime Bernier is not in a position to win.
No.
So I'm not going to waste my vote. I'm going to vote for the guy who's in a position to win that is leaps and bounds better than what we've had for the last 9 years in Canada.
I don't know how anyone can look at the last 9 years and be like, we should do that more. And again, I can respect that someone believes that. I just don't know how you get there.
I don't know.
But a lot of people are there. So I'm like, it's kind of like when everyone's talking about Kamala or Trump. I'm going, well, there's reasons that both of you vote the way you do. So why don't we just get curious about what appeals to you about this? Like, I'd really be curious. What appeals to you? I can actually understand based on the media why Carney appeals to like someone who hasn't done a deeper dive into him. I get it. He was head of the Bank of Canada.
Yeah, so
he helped with a financial time that was tough, even though
he served in the private sector, so he's going to be better at negotiating with Trump.
He's head in England, even though that wasn't good, Brexit. But, you know, there's like so much about him that if you dive deeper, you get more information. But I don't think we want to dive deeper. You know, I think that's the blue pill. The blue pill is like, you know, when you hear someone who's awakened to some clarity about how systems work, they go, oh, ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
But truthfully, it isn't, because when you know something needs to change or something is real and you pretend it's not, it causes an immense amount of suffering. You know, coming back to what we said about like people living in their own deceptions, lying or living, they can't sleep at night, let's be honest.
It's no different.
Or they need sleeping pills.
Yes. It's no different than picking up the bottle at the end of the day when you're struggling internally. It's temporary relief. But in the long run, you know that it just delays that pain and then it amplifies it in the long run. So I don't think it's ultimately serving to not do a deep dive on Carney and just look at the surface and say, oh, well, he's, you know, whatever. I think it's very tribal too. People just want to be on one team or the other. So I don't think it's serving, because it's just like, it's easy to just say, well, like, oh, he's in the private sector, this, that, or the other thing. I'm done. I'm joining my team of friends, because if I speak out and say what my friends don't want to hear, they're probably going to abandon me. Like, it's just easier in the short term. And I really think that's akin to drinking or doing all the unhealthy ways in which we cope with deep internal pain.
To avoid
ultimately what we're the most afraid of.
What do you see in terms of like people avoiding their purpose, their mission, their business? Because I think that's, if we're going to create gold pill lives, what do you see as the greatest block for people to do that?
Yeah, well, I think, was it Marianne Williamson who has it's a great quote, not a big fan of her politics these days, but she says our greatest fear
She does have great quotes.
Yeah, our greatest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our greatest fear is that we're powerful beyond belief. So I do think that there is a fear, often subconscious, that people aren't fully aware of stepping into the responsibility that they'll have to take on to do what's required to get to what lights their soul on fire and what they actually believe they were put on this earth to do. So I think that people block themselves. I mean, it's similar to, again, I find myself bringing this around to relationships because I'm on a podcast with Mark Groves, but it's the same reason why it's very common, I know you know, someone who yearns for a healthy, strong, a deep connection and romantic union will say that's what they want, but their actions won't align with that. They'll go out and they'll have casual sex because they're actually just afraid to actually be vulnerable and open up potentially an abandonment wound or something that's hurt them in the past. That would be stepping into a healthy union and actually committing. That's scary. So what we do is we just have these casual flings that don't actually really make us be vulnerable to opening up those wounds and temporarily validating us and make us feel wanted, but that just doesn't serve you in the long run. So it's so funny how all these things are really connected. And yeah, I think those two are greatly connected. You know, it's like, it's easy to just sit around and say that you want your mission and you want the business. There's a great thing that the Navy SEALs say, that everyone wants to go to heaven, but no one wants to die.
Wow.
So it's like, yeah. So it's like, I just think people are afraid to die. In order to truly live, you got to be willing to die.
Yeah. It's like we were talking about on the episode on your podcast, that Paul Check quote of like, if you knew what a soulmate was, you wouldn't want one. And I think about that with, if you really knew what it took to create an expansive, amazing, purpose-driven life, or to be gold-pilled.
Yeah.
You know, Abraham Hicks has a thing where she says that whenever you make a request for something, the universe will conspire to bring everything forward that needs to be revealed and healed to get it and to create it. And so I think a lot about that when you're like, I want that relationship, or I want that business. And I think about that in the trials and tribulations of my relationships or business experience, social media. Yes. It's all in service.
The best mental framework, particularly for an entrepreneur, but also in life in general, is that God, or whatever, fill in the blank, whatever word you want to use, God is trying to teach me something. This is a test that I have to endure and pass. And on the other side of that is a destination where you will then be more deserving for the universe to give you what you truly desire, right? So it's like, everything either happens, there's two ways to look at the tests and the inevitable adversity of life. We could look at it as it happens to us and we're a victim, or we could look at it as, you know, it's happening for us and it's one of the greatest opportunities for growth for me to get closer to where I want to get to. And that's why the business world is tough, man. Just like romantic relationships, just like having kids, it's all similar.
It is tough.
It's very tough, but the reason why I have found the ability to be so relentless, yes, it is because I will die trying. Like, there's no other option for me. There's no plan B. But I think it's also because everything is just a shift in perspective. So like when life's inevitable adversity comes, I almost immediately am just like, okay, why is this happening? Where in 3 months am I going to look back and say, ah, that's why that happened? Because this wouldn't be true, or I wouldn't be in this position, or I wouldn't have gained that, or achieved that, or conquered that, whatever, if that didn't happen. And I think that so many people are so afraid to step into their highest purpose, potential, and their mission, because they know that those tests are coming. They know it's going to bring them to their knees. It's just like a romantic relationship. You can think you're so healed, and then you get into a romantic relationship. You can think you're so healed, and then you start a business.
Oh, man, I think entrepreneurship is as potent of a vehicle for transformation. Maybe sometimes a little more, depending on what you're going through. Because to charge money for what you do means you have to build self-worth. And because there's like a value actually you're placing on your value. And then also, if something like an algorithm doesn't like what you're putting out there, you have to confront that, you know, like, yes. I think about that, like when a video does bad or a post does bad, I'm like, was that legitimately not good? Or like, was it good and the algorithm is just fucking me today? But a lot of the times it's just that the content wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Because ultimately what the computer is doing is saying, okay, is this getting traction based on all these metrics? Okay, we're going to give it to more people. It's not. Sorry. You know, we'll give you like a little bit.
And it's cutthroat, man. The business world is like, you can't get away with anything. The market is the market is the market, right? So that's why it's so difficult. But yeah, man, when you build a business, you have to face every single internal battle you are having. It will come up and be at the surface, and you got to find a way to get over it or you will not make it. And I think the most beneficial and profoundly positive return that you get from building a business is not what people think. It's not the money. It's not the metrics. It's not the followers. It's not the attention. I'm actually even going to go as far as saying it's not even how much you serve, although that is like at the top as well. It is who you become in the process. I don't think there's anything greater than that, because you end up making the money and you realize like, oh, now that I made the money I thought was going to make me happy, I was just in the I'll be happy when cycle, and I actually just want the next amount of money, right? Don't get me wrong. All those things are great, but it's who you become.
Yeah, amen to that. Yeah. Well, for people looking to build it, create it, be guided, Caleb Betts, Awaken Winning.
Yeah, thank you. You can go to theawbiz.com if you want to start a coaching business leverages the awe.
AWBiz. Awaken
Winning.
Yeah.
No, Awaken Winning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. See what we did there? It's awesome.
I know a few people in the program and they love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, we actually, I think what I'm really proud of is like not only me, but I have a team that like genuinely cares. There's no shortage of people in that industry who are just there to make money and just get through. And then they're really engaged with you in the sales process. And then when it comes to fulfillment, they're kind of like, you know,
it's done.
If there's one thing that keeps me up at night, it's like if we have a client who's not succeeding, like that is one thing that will keep me up.
You want to figure
way
it
more
out.
Than fucking Klaus Schwab and the WEF. So yeah, theawbiz.com, you can check it out. You can check out Awaken Winning podcast. Mark's been on now. It'll be for the fourth time.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
We've known each other a while now.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Dude. So great to have you on.
Thanks, man.
I love that we can riff on all of it and then
we
come back home.
Wherever.
And then we come back home.
Yes, 100%.
So appreciate you, man.
Thank you, man.